This is CliffCentral.com.
You're listening to The Bounce Show with Byron Karpinski. I'm Hugh Bladen, and it's on CliffCentral.com.
It's Cliff Central, Blades, and it's Ben Karpinski.
Why didn't you tell me? Ben Karpinski on CliffCentral.com.
Big bassy intro. How's it? How are you doing? Welcome back. Missed the show last week. I was in Indonesia. I was at Club Med Bintan Island. What a place. What an experience. I was there primarily to play golf, but also just to do the whole resort experience. And what an experience it was. If you go onto the bounce.co.za, I've already put one video up, and that is of me and the Ria Bintan golf course. It's the way I set my life up is that all I want to do, like, for me, true wealth is travel and experiences, all that kind of stuff. And last week, in those terms, I felt like a bajillionaire. It was just so cool to be at this place, really amongst great people. It's a complete and utter beach paradise. It's the island life, but with all the perks, all the great things you really, really want out of a holiday. But this golf course, wow. Like, you know, it's one thing going to a course where there's an amazing setting, but the fact that, like, the conditioning of the place, the layout of the golf course is just superb championship course, and the service, it's just a really beautiful part of the world. So it is 45 minutes south of Singapore. You take a 10.5-hour flight from Johannesburg to get there, and then it's a little ferry trip. So 45 minutes in the ferry. It's really cool because you see all the big buildings of Singapore and you dodge all the big boats and then you're there, Bintan Island. So I'll be giving you, well, I'll be putting more content out around my week there last week. It's just, I've got so much work to do because when you go away for a week, it's one thing. But when you go away for a week and you're also compiling content, wow, you've got so much to catch up on. But the show comes first. Well, it does for the next hour at least. And today's a good one. We got Dennis Friedman. We all know Dennis. He's our favorite cricket correspondent. Now, Dennis, ever to put cock on block on any kind of opinion, any kind of matter where he thinks is important, he's kind of, if it's safe to say, he's created a niche in Pakistan. But Dennis is one of those guys that can really either you love him or hate him. If you're English, you hate him. And if you're Pakistani, by the sounds of things, you love him. So he's found a bit of a niche sort of audience in that country. And, you know, he's not scared to, like, tackle the big issues, whether it be about their players and match fixing or about the fact that, you know, India-Pakistan relations are frayed for various reasons, in which Dennis will then probably attack Sachin Tendulkar's record. So he's a guy that doesn't shy away from controversy. And it's just so great to see people who are really not scared to go and find stories. You know, like, Dennis has a full-time job. He's a full-time family man. But here he is doing things in kind of in a field of investigative journalism that people aren't prepared to do. We all know that Pakistan weren't allowed to play home games, or they haven't been for quite some time now. They play their home games in the UAE, and despite that, they managed to become the number one test team in the world. And we all know Pakistan is just dogged with all kinds of things, but yet they somehow still maintain a team that can actually upset the best out there. And they won the Champions Trophy recently. They're so much more successful than the Proteas. Their resources are so much fewer. All they've got essentially are just young kids with amazing hair that can bowl really fast and essentially hit the ball over the boundary ropes. So that's in a nutshell. Dennis, of course, is going there to go interview people, find out what's happening in the country, find out if it's a place that should become an international cricket destination again. And he'll be interviewing people in his own weird and wonderful ways as he does that. So today we're going to get more about his trip, what inspired it, what he's looking forward to, and if he's actually going. Because I'm pretty sure I saw a tweet yesterday about the fact that he might have some difficulty entering the country. I mean, they wouldn't take Imran Tahir. They told Imran Tahir he's got no chance of going to Pakistan, even the fact that he used to be from that country. Anyways, let's not get into that. Dennis, of course, will give me all the news around that. We need to get into what's happening in sport right now, and it is not a good time for Bafana Bafana. So every 3-4 years, football fans in South Africa get really hopeful that maybe, just maybe, the national team could go to the World Cup. So they were at the World Cup in 2010 because obviously they hosted it. I think they were last at the World Cup in South Korea, which was 2002, if my flaky memory serves. But basically, the bottom line is not a great record. Don't get to the tournament very often, and it's knockout phases if they do. So Stuart Baxter was the new coach. Bafana have sort of steadied the ship of late. They had a good unbeaten run. They were beating some teams in Africa that they'd never beaten before. Things were looking on the up and up. Stuart Baxter came in charge, and, well, the team's got right back to where it was. They lost to Cape Verde, home and away. If you don't know too much about this island, it literally is just a small little island. It's like a volcanic atoll almost. Okay, maybe I'm being a bit harsh. It's a genuine island. But still, there's a population of 500,000 people. And they beat Bafana 2-1 last Friday, and then they beat them again this week 2-1, this time in Durban. So two losses, it's just not good enough. But because they beat Senegal, they still had some sort of a chance mathematically of staying in the hunt for World Cup qualification. But then yesterday it was revealed the match against Senegal now has to be replayed because Joseph Joseph Lamptey, he's been banned for life. Okay, so he was the ref. There was a very contentious penalty decision at best where the Senegalese defender came in contact with the ball in the box. The ball hit his knee. The referee adjudicated it to be a handball. Bafana got a penalty. They scored. They won 2-1. Happy days, right? Well, no, FIFA's saying, nope, doesn't count. This game must now be replayed. The points in this game are now scrapped, and it's back to square one. So Bafana now have to literally win every game to have a mathematical chance, and the game they've already won didn't count. So, like, you can't script what an absolute train wreck these things are for this team right now. And obviously morale and belief in this team is back to an all-time low. It's kind of, it's just sad. It's just so, so sad. And Stuart Baxter, for all his pedigree and all his local experience, well, he really is just looking lost right now. And the fans are giving him no sympathy whatsoever. But there is a good story around football right now. And that's got to do with a team that you would not expect whatsoever to be in the conversation of football, let alone on the ability to actually make the World Cup themselves. And that is Syria. Syria. There is a team from Syria who play football. Somehow they managed to get it together, and they are now have a chance of qualifying for the World Cup in Russia 2018. So how this came about is that they drew 2-2 with Iran. So that means that they go through, and now they go into an Asian qualifier. So the Asian qualifier means they now have to play the Socceroos, Australia. So they didn't. So you get automatic qualifications in sort of the bigger pool. So Bafana right now, they're in a group where there's four teams, right? So if they win that group, top of that group, they get in. So how it works, other groups and the various stages of qualifying for the World Cup, there is now playoffs in within the playoffs. So that is where Syria now go on to play Australia. So that'll be in October, so that's next month. Now, bear in mind, just like we opened up the show talking about Pakistan not having a home ground, Syria play all their home games in Malaysia. Now, if you know anything about geography, that's not exactly around the corner. So it is a bit of a ball ache for them, and it really is something that's like, first up, their country is war-torn, ISIS-riddled, and Damascus, the capital city, is an absolute mess. Okay, so they've got that to deal with, first up. Then there's the whole thing about getting a team together, and there's no funding whatsoever for the Syrian team. I mean, who's going to fund a Syrian football team? The government probably doesn't give a toss. There's no corporate sponsorship like that. There's not going to be international teams that are looking to queue up to put money into this. So they have nothing going for them other than just belief and a bit of talent. And they've also got a commentator that is really, really passionate about these guys. So Syria are going to play Australia next month. And if they win that, well, they're just that much closer to getting into the World Cup, where hopefully this guy will commentate throughout. His name is Omar Al-Somar. Sorry, that's the guy who scored the goal.
الهدف الثاني الثاني تمرير يلا الثاني جول الله 90 شو اللي عم بيصير والله للجماهير ابكي افرح الله.
So basically in South America they've always been going goal, whereas the sort of Middle Eastern Arabic equivalent of that is Allah. Good for these guys. See, sport can make you smile. This is a good thing about this. All these horrible countries with their stupid ideology. Get a bit of football in there. Get a bit of sport in there. We saw it with cricket with Afghanistan. We can break the shackles of these horrible, stupid people, these religious fanatics. And, well, sport can always win. Allah. Yeah, it was a pretty good goal. So yeah, Syria, they play Australia in a two-legged clash, and then if they win that, they go through to play someone from the CONCACAF region, and if they win that, they're in Russia. And that'll be quite something. Yeah, so that's the football. There's obviously other World Cup qualifiers throughout the world right now, which means that there hasn't been any league action, and it's nice to see the international stuff, but it's not nearly as interesting. And people aren't as invested in the process. All the big teams have been winning, although France, they drew with Luxembourg, which is just embarrassing. 0-0 against Luxembourg. Very, very dodgy there, considering all the talent the French team do have. And that's pretty much all you need to know about sport. It is, it's a big week for tennis because obviously the US Open gets to its final this weekend. And for the first time, South Africans actually have something to really cheer about. So not since 2003 has there been a South African in the semifinals of a Grand Slam. But Kevin Anderson, well, he beat Sam Querrey yesterday, and with that, he is into the US Open semifinals. His best result so far has been a quarterfinal. In the Grand Slams, but he's gone one better here. And it's a really big deal for a player like him. So, you know, he's a solid player. He's obviously going to make a good living out of the game because he's thereabouts. But to get to this, like the upper echelons of sport, if you make the fourth round in tennis, you're making good money, right? But you get into this kind of rarefied atmosphere, it's a real big deal. So he'll be taking on Karina Busta from Spain. That'll be his semifinal opponent. And then on the top side, well, Jean Del Potro, I think his first name is Jean-Martin Del Potro, he beat Federer, which is a real shame because everybody wanted to see the Federer-Nadal semifinal. Nadal was too good for the Russian teenager, so he's gone through. So Nadal Del Potro, Anderson Karina Busta, that is your semifinals for the men's. And in the women's, well, it's an all-American affair. Of course, still no Serena because she's becoming a mom. And that's obviously a big priority. So she's been out for, most of the year after winning the Australian Open. So the semifinals will be Coco Vandeweghe and some woman called Keys. Forgot her name now, her first name. So two Americans there. And then Venus. So Venus has actually been doing great since Serena's gone into maternity leave. She'll be taking on Stevens. So four Americans, which is quite a contrast from the American game. Sorry, the men's game where the Americans don't feature. They just don't feature at all. Women's tennis is so strong there for them. So that is your semi-final draw for the final Grand Slam of the year. Andy Murray, he'll be out for the rest of the year because his troublesome hip injury has really plagued him throughout. Of course, he's not featuring here. Either is Djokovic, so the bottom side where Kevin Anderson is, very much open draw, and hopefully he can make it all the way through the finals from that. Into cricket, we're not going to touch on too much of what's going on in the test match. We can just open up with Dennis in a bit, because Australia is doing very well against Bangladesh finally. But Otis Gibson is officially the Proteas coach, and it's across all three formats. He is doing his finals are duties with England right now, because he has been the bowling coach for the English, and they're current in a series decider against West Indies in the test series. It's 1-1 so far. The decider will be played at Lords, which will be starting basically now, if you're listening, live. Otherwise, yeah, it's a Thursday to Monday affair. And Otis Gibson, well, is he the best guy for the job? You know, there is no sort of best guy. Best guy, like, it's all very, very subjective. But he is someone new. And I think there's a lot you can look into this. I wrote a piece about this for the website holdingwilly.com. It's an Indian cricket website that I write for every month. And I am very, I wouldn't say pessimistic. I'm just kind of, if you join the dots where things have been going in SA cricket, and obviously that tour of England has just been embarrassing. because the English team isn't so flash. I still believe that there's massive flaws in that English team. The West Indies just exposed it. I mean, they beat them handsomely in that second test. And this South African team was just, it didn't have its usual sort of fight or tenacity, if nothing else. Sure, there's been some issues around star players not playing or being injured, but there should always be enough to beat the English team, or at least be competitive, at the very least. We've got a great record in England, and it's now all just done. That's it. These great records that the Proteas have are falling away. And the fact that they did what they always do in the Champions Trophy as well, it just hasn't been a good season for the Proteas. So Russell Domingo's gone. He will now sort of step back into the SAA fold. That is, of course, the team below the Proteas. It's the next one. It's not some dodgy, bankrupt, corrupt airline. So with Otis, you know, he's been around the block as far as the player's concerned, kind of more considered your journeyman sort of cricket pro rather than your out-and-out international superstar. But he has played international cricket. He's played quite a lot of cricket in South Africa itself. So I remember growing up as a wee boy back in the 90s, I remember watching Otis playing in back in the Benson Hedges 50-over day-night series. That was a thing. So Otis will know parts of South Africa. It's now about acclimatizing to the current South Africa with the political, what do you phrase it? The political landscape, I guess, of how teams get selected, how development is done. And a lot is made of this because it is a lot to take in. Now, you can gloss over it by saying, well, you know, that's just how it is. Sure, but you've got to understand it in order to do the best with it. It's one thing accepting how things are in South Africa, it's a very another thing, different thing all together to actually really understand it and be able to work it. So how that will take place, obviously, it's a group effort. So Otis is going to need a whole bunch from Faf du Plessis. He's going to need a whole bunch from Cricket South Africa itself, but to the point where he isn't stifled. Now, this is going to be the horrible balancing act that SA Cricket now has to play with this new coach. Because he's a foreign coach, he should be able to bring expertise that we wouldn't get internally. And that is a plus of having Otis Gibson. But the fact that he's a foreign coach is that there's going to be a lot of management internally. And whenever people get managed, especially in a playing environment that is not healthy, when the boardroom goes onto the playing field, it's a difficult thing for anyone to understand, let alone get the best out of any situation. So I am quietly not so confident. I hope I'm wrong about this. But he's the new face. Take this team to the World Cup in 2019. And obviously just try to get back in the mix test-wise. It's a difficult start because, well, you got Bangladesh for a small test series. And then it might be India. You know, India doing the usual thing where they're umming and ahhing, playing hard to get, knowing that they hold all the leverage. They hold all the leverage in world cricket. So there's meant to be a test series, but you know, no one's got dates, no one's got confirmation. India are playing Sri Lanka in a whole bunch of pointless matches where Sri Lanka are literally just rolling over. And it's going to be difficult for him to then plan, you know. So if that series doesn't happen, then what? The guy needs to have plans, he needs to have fixtures, he needs to know what he's doing, where he's going with his team. So I wish him nothing but the best, but it's going to be very, very difficult. Into golf. Well, it's a very exciting time for golf because we get into the end of the season. So the big money events around the FedEx Cup all being played. Justin Thomas, he won again. He won the Dell Technologies something or other. And with that, I think it's almost kind of sewn up that he will be sort of the golfer of the year. You know, he's finally got through. He won his first major. He won those three events right at the start of the season. He shot a 59. He broke course records and tournament records, and the guy really is just coming into his own, and he's just so much more than Jordan Spieth's friend now. Junior ranks growing up, these two are neck and neck, so there's no surprise that they are kind of now more of a parity as far as you know, golfing abilities on the big stage. It's just that Jordan has such a blowout, such a explosion out of the blocks as a pro. But I think Justin Thomas, the way the guy goes about the game, he's a fantastic finisher. People are making this a really big thing now. And it just bodes well for American golf, which brings me into the President's Cup. So once the FedEx Cup's done and dusted, we then have the President's Cup, and that will be 26th of September that will start. So as you know, it's essentially the Ryder Cup format, but you've got the Americans taking on the rest of the world, so everybody who's not European. And sadly, this tournament has promised so much, but it's delivered very little over the years because it's just been so one-sided. The best that the international have done is they won in 98 in Melbourne, and then in 2003 they drew in Fancourt in George here in South Africa. So I can't see the internationals troubling the Americans here because these guys, if you look, I think interesting stat. If you take all the world rankings of the teams, so there is a 12-man team, so you get the top 10. Just to run you through the Americans, so it's Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Ricky Fowler, Daniel Berger, Brooks Koepka, Kevin Kisner, Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar, Kevin Chappell. Those are the guys who are qualified by points. And then Steve Stricker, who is the captain. He has two captain's picks. He's gone with Charlie Hoffman, which is the next guy in form, and Phil Mickelson, who, of course, is just an all-round legend of golf. Add all those up, the average world ranking for this team is 15.6, okay? 15.6, your average ranking. You look at the international team, well, that's headed up by Hideki Matsuyama. Then you've got Jason Day, Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, Mark Leishman, Charles Schwartzel, Brandon Grace, Siwoo Kim, Jonathan Vegas, Adam Hadwin, and then Nick Price, the captain of the international team, has chosen Emiliano Grillo and Anirban Lahiri. Those are your two picks, and they add up to, well, not quite the greats. Score an average of 31.9 in the world rankings, so basically double. I know it's just stats, you can't really take much into it, but when you think that Adam Scott isn't the golfer he used to be, Jason Day's form is all over the place, Louis Oosthuizen also kind of up and down. It's just there isn't a lot of form in this team. Matsuyama is obviously an incredible player. The wild card picks are very much wild card picks. But like that American team, well, that is just brimming with talent, form, ability, and star power. But let's not worry about that. Let's get into some cricket. I think that's my rest of my checklist. US Open tennis, that's going well. Cricket's, no one else has pulled out of that T20 Global League, which is a good thing. Rugby-wise, of course, it is the Rugby Championship this weekend. So the Boks have announced their team. And their Quinny Oosthuizen has been given the go-ahead from an injury niggle. But Franco Mostert is being managed. So that means Ludwig Djoga comes onto the bench. And Peter Steffes-Atoya will start next to Eben Etzebeth. Otherwise, it's pretty much the team you expect. But Andre Pollard, he comes onto the bench. And Kerwin Bosch has gone back to playing Currie Cup rugby. Pollard, there's been many things written about the fact that his conditioning is coming along great. He is looking like he's raring to go. The guy really hasn't played much in 2 years. And obviously there's huge amounts of potential with this guy, huge amounts of belief in him from all the coaches that are around. So it'll be interesting to see if he's be used and how he'll be used over the weekend. And people still believe that there's question marks around Elton Jantjies, who, no matter what he does, I think he'll always be hard for him to kind of win over the South African rugby public. So that match, 11:35 South African time, the All Blacks will be taking Argentina prior to that. So you've got a great weekend of rugby championships, rugby this weekend. But this whole matchup between Australia and the Springboks, it could not really come at a better time. Both of these teams have come on the back or come off the back of a pretty woeful run of results when you think the last 18 months. But they seem to be hitting form in that the Boks look settled. They've got a good team. The Aussies, well, if you look at the last sort of 120 minutes against the All Blacks, they were pretty good. They were blown away in that first 40 minutes in Sydney. But after that, they actually looked pretty good against the world's best team. And obviously an interesting stat that Sport24 was throwing around, that both of these teams have played 101 rugby championship matches. Of that, each side has won 42 matches, each have lost 57, and each have lost 2. So 101 games, identical record. They've both been dominated by New Zealand over the years. They've both had their own successes, their own triumphs. They've both had their very, very low lows. So it's going to be a very good match. And it's the first real, I believe, the first fantastically difficult or just test kind of challenge for the Boks this year. I know that with the French, you know, you still had to beat them, and they did, and the Boks have done very well in doing so. The RG's been scrappy, but they're always tough opponents. But now it comes down to what I believe is a real, real test match, and I'm massively excited about that. So that's the rugby for the weekend. Of course, there's a lot of Currie Cup on the go. There's the Pro 14 as well with the Cheetahs and Kings. They are playing against Northern Hemisphere teams. Still too early to call, but they both suffered big losses this last weekend. It's been very interesting to see how that thing develops. But from here, we must get into our chat with Dennis, who is, I think it's just over a week until he goes over to Pakistan. Now, as I was saying at the start of the show, Dennis is always up for doing different things within cricket. And a trip to Pakistan isn't exactly what a lot of people would have gone for, but that is what Dennis has done. Dennis, how's it going?
How's it been? I'm going well, mate.
Yeah, all right. Very good. Thanks. Very good. So, I don't know where to start with this. This sounds like the most bizarre trip that anybody in the field of sports journalism has ever wanted to take up. Is this because you were curious, or is this because you developed a bit of a cult sort of status in Pakistan?
I don't know. It's hard to explain, mate. It's I think it's curiosity that's taken over into a. Where to start? So I was following the Champions Trophy semi-final and final when Pakistan beat England in the semi-final and they beat India in the final. And both times I was drunk at a pub with friends and sort of said, oh, we should go to Pakistan. We should go to Pakistan. And then
all the great ideas start with I was drunk at a pub with friends.
Yes. And so I tweeted out after the final when they won the final that that's it. I'm coming to Pakistan. And in the morning, when I finally awoke and checked my replies, it had gone a bit crazy. And there's a genuine desire for Pakistanis to get vindication, I think, from people outside of Asia that it's first world safe and a pleasant place to be. So I'm a bit of an adventurer and stuff, and I'm going. And I've been organising the trip for a while now, and for maybe about 8 weeks. It's happened pretty quick, but off we go. So hopefully in about a week and a bit's time I get on a plane. Mind you, I'm still waiting for my friggin' visa to turn up. But I'm told reliably from the Ministry of the Interior in Islamabad it's only a day or so away. But off we go. And, there's a lot of things I want to explore, Ben. I guess we have all these perceptions as you know, you and I, we're sort of, as everyone else would tell us, we're privileged middle-class white guys. And I really want to understand, is Pakistan what we think it is? Is it full of suicide bombers and terrorists and guys that shit in the street and corruption? And is it filthy or is it something else? And, there hasn't been Test cricket played there since 2009 when terrorists did shoot up the Sri Lankan team bus. You know, that's something we can't deny. But sure. I really want to explore if that's changed. And the locals in Pakistan, the media that I deal with, and a lot of my followers who I like engaging with and enjoy engaging with tell me it's safe to come, and I'm going to go find out. And as my wife said, mate, if I come back alive, I've done one better than Osama bin Laden because he didn't get out of there alive.
Now, from my understanding, Islamabad has kind of been like a safe zone. I mean, that's pretty much like it's been a bit of a compound. So there hasn't been an issue about playing games in Islamabad. It's more about the other regions. Is that correct?
Look, there's been issues in Lahore. So that's where the shooting happened on the team bus with Sri Lanka in 2009. But the main cities of Lahore, Islamabad, Karachi, are sort of on the eastern side of Pakistan along the Indian border, if you're thinking about a map. And that side, I feel, is okay. It's when you go to the western side, the Afghan border, and maybe into the north a bit against the Chinese border, it can get a little bit hairy, and into sort of that Kashmir space where the line of control is. But one of my aims is to get up to the line of control and hit a ball over the line into India to say stuff you, India. I also hope to hit a ball into Osama bin Laden's compound, which is an hour north of Islamabad, in a place called Faisalabad. So if I get up there, we'll have some film of me doing that too.
So how have you gone in planning your trip? Like, what's your itinerary, or you literally get into the airport and you're gonna see what happens?
I have no idea, Ben. I've got a local fixer. Look, the guys at cricketandgif.com, who's probably the main Pakistani cricket website, they've been fantastic in helping put this together. But the reality is, as you would know, when you plan a trip to do a documentary or do this kind of thing, you know, best laid plans, as soon as you land, put them to bed. This is Pakistan. I don't expect anything to go as planned. I don't expect anything to be easy. I do have an itinerary that has me in Karachi, Islamabad, Multan, Lahore, Peshawar, and maybe into the north into a place called Gilgit. But God knows, mate, I've got to get through customs first. And then once I get inside the main cities, as a journalist, I need permission on the day to be able to go places. So access around Pakistan won't be too easy outside of the major cities. I've got some really interesting challenges lined up. I've challenged Misbah Ul Haq to a push-up challenge. I've been training hard for that. At the moment, he's tentatively available on the date, so I want to see him. I've got a cricket match lined up with some ex-Pakistani cricketers. I've got some interviews lined up with some guys that have been charged and and convicted of corruption over there. So it's going to be interesting. They're all the plans. Now, whether they come off or not is another story. I've also got, for those that might be listening in Pakistan, I've got some meet and greets lined up in the main cities. We'll be doing meet and greets at all the Mocha coffee cafes, and then at two of the universities. We'll be announcing in a day or so some shows that I'm doing where I'm going to try and do some stand-up cricket comedy and see how that goes. That could be a complete disaster, but every dollar raised will go to charity, so it's worth coming just for that.
So you essentially are basically doing what Steve Waugh did after he retired. You're just going there, goodwill mission. You're gonna hold babies and that kind of stuff.
No, no, Steve Waugh legitimately did it for charity. I'm doing it just to raise my profile and to see if I can tell a story. Steve Waugh had much better motives than I do.
So the whole thing about Pakistan being kind of like the North Korea of cricket, when you think about it, it's in isolation. Is there any talk that the ICC are going, okay, look, guys, if we get this in place and that in place, and if you guys play ball with this and give us some assurances, is there even talk about international cricket returning? Like, but genuinely, no, we're not talking about just like a random Zimbabwe test match or something like that.
Yeah, no, Ben, there's a lot. I mean, obviously Zimbabwe went there 2 years ago. We have the World 11 T20s happening next week. I think they start on the 11th. So there's three of those with sort of some current and washed up cricketers going for three T20s. I can tell you now the security arrangements for that.
It's got to be current and washed up because they won't let Imran Tahir go.
Yeah, but Paul Collingwood's going, right? So that kind of balances that out. But the security for that is high. You know, it's VVIP and it's all in one city and it's easy to lock down.
Yeah.
There's talk of at least one ODI of the upcoming Sri Lankan tour in the following weeks to be played in Lahore. So that's on the cards. There's current negotiations going with the West Indies Cricket Board to get over there for some ODIs as well. But really, if you want to break the back of this, India need to pull their head out of their ass and get back over there and start playing Test cricket again. And I think we just, as sport lovers, Ben, and as cricket lovers, we miss so much by not having cricket in Pakistan. It's just another dimension to what goes on. And it's very different to, say, India. You know, we think it's just the same. But if you think about India, we think about slow-turning pitches and spinners and whatnot, whereas Pakistan's the home of the great fast bowler and has a totally different culture and has a warrior class of quicks that just continually pumps out. And we're missing seeing that on their own pitches. And, I'd love to see Mohammad Amir bowling to Virat Kohli in Karachi. How good would that be?
Well, exactly. Like, I find, maybe that's just my upbringing, but I just find cricket's got a bit soft that now spinning is dominating everything. You think spin, T20, the spinners are the kings. Test matches now, spinners are opening the bowling. I mean, that's like Nathan Lyon is an opening bowler now. So I agree with you. You know, we get that strange, fearsome, fast bowling. When Waqar Yunus used to run in there with his 9.5 fingers, he was making batsmen shit their pants because that was cricket for them. It was so exciting to see, and like having that element back, like I forgot his name, the guy that had syphilis.
Shoaib Akhtar.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it was genital warts. But
sorry.
Shoaib Akhtar, Wasim Akram, Waqar Yunus, Mohammad Amir, Mohammad Asif, Imran Khan. You can keep going. They Pakistan produced warriors. And on the batsmen's, on the batting side, you had guys like Inzamam and Yunus and Misbah have just retired. If you go back a little bit further, there was that guy that waved the bat at Dennis Lilly. I've just his name. Not Salim Malik. I've had a mental blank. Doesn't matter. At the Waqar, you've had little Pakistani guys threaten Dennis Lilly with cricket bats. These guys are warriors and they're fighters. And we need to get that back. We need to see that back. It's not the same playing in front of three goats and two sort of Filipino maids and a whole lot of sand in the middle of Dubai. That's not home cricket for them.
Exactly. So you touched on the point that India needs to come to the party, but I mean, India, they can't even like confirm fixtures to go play South Africa. This is a place that's actually quite nice to come and travel to, and it's proven. So they can't even do that at the moment. So I don't have much faith in that turning around. Like, is it purely a point, you reckon, that there's no interest for India financially, so therefore they couldn't give a toss? Or is it purely just it's a ego thing?
No, this is purely politics and ego. The biggest financial rewards for Indian cricket is to play Pakistan. There's 180 million people on the other side of the border. There is no bigger market than Pakistan for India to go play. And this is political ego. If you look at who's been running the BCCI recently, you had Anurag Thakur recently. You know, he's a minister of parliament, so for him it's all about votes. Before him, you had your good friend Srinivasan.
Yeah.
For him, it was all about lining his own pockets. For him and MS Dhoni.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at the moment it's under control of the Supreme Court, so at least there's some sense coming back to it. But it's just going to take time. You know, and the Indians are hypocrites. They say, oh, no, we can't play Pakistan. We won't do bilateral series against Pakistan. You know, they're a terrorist nation. They send terrorists to play us. Oh, unless it's a World Cup, of course, and then we'll obviously play because we wouldn't want to miss out on that.
Yeah, we'll definitely, like by coincidence, be in the same group and play. Yeah, it's total accident.
Yeah. Total accident.
So with regards to some of your interviews, lining those up, is it because you want to get guys who will sort of speak the truth, or are you going to have, you know, like do you sort of have like a content sort of angle you really want to get out of this trip? And do you have, in your opinion, interviews that will help that?
Yeah, look, good question. I do. I want to explore people that were around in 2009 and understand the security situation then and now. I'm trying to, well, I have lined up at the moment tentatively, you know, some majors in the army and some people from the Ministry of the Interior to talk about the security situation. I want to attack that perception. I've got people that have been involved in match fixing and around that, and I want to explore that from the corruption angle. I'm trying really, really hard to get to Wasim Akram. You know, my thoughts on him, and I've written extensively about him and his involvement in corruption in Pakistani cricket.
Yep.
At the moment, I'm trying to blackmail him essentially by saying, look, if you don't have the interview with me, I'm just going to record some video footage of me calling you and you either not answering the phone or telling me no, and then we can see that you're a bit of a coward. So either way, that's going to be fun. And then I'm also, you know, that's the negative side of Pakistan and the perceptions I want to explore. The positive side is we've organised a street ball tournament, a tape ball tournament. I've got a cricket match where I'm playing in a local 2020 match in a local club down at Karachi. I'm going to go and explore the countryside and see what Pakistan is all about outside of the cities. So I want to take it from all angles. Cricket's obviously the glue, and I think most people that will watch this will have some interest in cricket. And people will want to see that if I can get to Imran Khan and these kind of guys. But I'm sure they'll also want to see, hey, you know, is it really just a big, ugly slum? Or is it something different to that? And we'll explore that.
Look, I think it's such I wouldn't say noble gesture, that sounds a bit cliched, but I just think we get force-fed so much crap in the media, and everyone's got their own agendas, and whatever it may be, people are always going to cut and paste from somewhere else because too much hard work to find a real story. Now, with you going there, have you been approached by other sort of media outlets or people that want to kind of get more of your voice around the situation? So, like, as far as if you're there...
Again, it's a bit in and out. So, you know, I've had a big TV station talking to me about running. I was planning to make a movie. They want 6 half-hour episodes, so we might cut it up like that for those guys, and they want to run it before the PSL starts in January. I've got 2 radio interviews booked on the 2 biggest radio networks. I've got a couple of sort of breakfast TV type stuff things booked up. And I've got a lot of journalists that sort of want to play and do the story. But the interest is there. The interest is strong, and it's good. The corporate interest has been really strong as well, which I'm really happy about, which allows us to make a decent, put together a decent production rather than having to film it on my iPhone on a selfie stick, which was my original plan. But we'll see how it comes together. Ben, look, I guess one thing I've learned through this process, one of the guys who spoke to me in the early days when I announced I'm coming, said, Dennis, this is Pakistan. A lot of tea can fall from the cup between you by the time you raise it and by the time it gets to your lips. And I'm fighting that. There's a lot of promises made and things happen and then things don't happen. So, again, it's a bit chaotic and I don't know how it'll be, but at the moment I feel that I'm going to be safe and I feel that I'm surrounded by some good people when I get over there and... There's a lot of goodwill flowing my way at the moment, and I just hope that I can do the right thing by the Pakistani people and the cricket public and put together a story or a narrative that shows the true Pakistan. Now, it may prove to be, Ben, that the perceptions that you and I have about Pakistan and have been making jokes about Pakistan all these years hold true.
Sure.
And that's the story I'm going to tell. Or it may hold true that the perceptions that we have are totally... inverse to what the reality is. And if that's the truth, then I'll tell that. But as you know, mate, I'm not shy of telling it how it is. So whatever I find, that's what we're going to show.
Very nice, Dennis. Well, I wish you all the best with your travels. But before I let you go, we've got to quickly touch on this Australia-Bangladesh series. First test did not go well for the Aussies. Was that a bit of a surprise, or is it just very much like once you're in the jungle, so to speak, you know, you're going to really battle in the conditions?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I think I predicted Bangladesh should probably win it 2-0. The squad they took over there is a joke. They've fallen back into their old ways of trying to play 15 bits and pieces cricketers in a team of 11, right? So, we've got four all-rounders in this team. We've got four spinners. We've got a wicketkeeper that can't catch. It's a bit of a mess.
And I see...
We did that.
I see Maxwell's batting 5. Cartwright, I'm pulling a blank here, because basically that's the Mitchell Marsh position. He's batting 6. And then, and then you got Wade, Agar. Is that the right Agar? Which of the brothers is that? I heard the younger brother got more talent.
Or is it's it, is the it, Agar that made the 98 in
is
the
is it Ashes. Ashes hero, Ashton Agar. Okay. And then you're basically just playing one seamer and just a whole bunch of spinners. Yeah,
and the seamer we're playing is a guy that's played, this is his fifth test match, and he made his debut in 2011 or something against you guys. Here's a bloke that can't even stay on the park, and we're bowling him into the ground in some of the harshest conditions known to man for cricket. I'm really surprised, to be honest, what's happened today. I mean, if it wasn't for Nathan Lyon, who is the greatest of all time, as you and I know.
Well, second
they'd be in a world of hurt.
So is this just a way of like sort of resting the steamers for the big thing, which is, of course, the Ashes?
Hazelwood's injured. Stark's injured. Pattinson's told the selectors he doesn't want to play until the Ashes, so that his body's 100% right. So they're only left with Cummins. They took Bird over there and haven't bowled him. I think that the team that's there now is not the team that's going to play the Ashes. The Ashes will get back to 3 mad quicks, Nathan Lyon, hopefully a decent keeper, 5 batsmen, and we'll have one donkey batting at number 6. Whether that name is Cartwright, Marsh, Maxwell, Moses Henriques, who knows, but it'll be someone that we think's Jacques Callis and will end up playing like Jade Dernbach.
No, but really, pardon my ignorance, but who is the top 5, though? Because obviously Renshaw, Warner, Smith, that's like done and dusted. But who are the other two that could make a top 5 here?
Khawaja will bat 3.
Yeah, but Smith Australia will bat 4. Australia hates Khawaja, though. The selectors, I mean, has he done something with the selector's daughter or something? Because that guy, he'll score 100 and he'll be carrying drinks after that.
Yeah, so they have this thing, right? It's like, it's this perceptions like you have of Pakistan, that the selectors have this perception of Khawaja in Asia, which is he can't play. I'll take it back. We went there in February to play India, and they had this one-month training camp in Dubai, and they pulled Khawaja, who was the most informed ODI player in the world at that time, out of a tour of New Zealand, of an ODI tour, and they took him to Dubai to get ready for a month to go to India, and then didn't play him in one test match. And then they take him to Bangladesh. They play him in one match and drop him again for some guy called Hilton Cartwright, who's a Zimbabwean born. He should be playing for you guys. He's done nothing ever. But, you know, this is the way of the Australian selectors when we do tours. At home, we tend to get selections right. So it'll be Renshaw, Warner, Khawaja, Smith, Hanscom, either Wade or Neville. Number 6 will be Maxwell, Henriques, Cartwright or Mitch Marsh. There'll be Wade or Neville, 3 bowlers and a spinner. And that'll be the right team. But, I wish we could get a decent number 6.
Yeah, well...
We need Bavuma. Can we borrow Bavuma for summer?
Exactly. Timber Bavuma, value at 6. But then again, the Proteas are strong in all the wrong areas. But then that's a different conversation altogether. Dennis, I'm going to let you go there. One last question. But obviously, still strong enough to win the Ashes, though.
They'll win the Ashes 5-0. The English side... I'm calling that now, Ben, and I don't say that even facetiously. The English side is a joke. The top 5 of England has Joe Root and Alistair Cook, and that's it. And then it's a team of all-rounders. And guys like Moeen Ali and Ben Stokes won't be able to perform on the bouncy pitches in Australia. James Anderson, the ball doesn't swing in Australia. The most dangerous thing that England can bring to Australia is probably some sort of disease that gets through customs and then infects the Australian dressing room. They are going to get smashed.
Are you telling me you guys aren't quaking your boots for Toby Rowland-Jones?
Guys with hyphenated names that go to private schools are the scariest thing known to man, Ben. You and I both know that, but he's not it.
All right, Dennis. Well, we'll keep tabs. When do you actually leave for Pakistan, visa pending?
If the visa comes through Monday or Tuesday, then I'm going to go on. I leave on the 19th. If it doesn't, I'm just going to push the trip back a week. But it's definitely on.
All right. Fantastic. So that's Dennis underscore cricket, or Dennis cricket underscore. I always forget.
Dennis Cricket underscore
on the Twitter. That's the first place to find Dennis. Dennis, I wish you nothing but the best, and I look forward to chatting to you after your trip, which is no doubt going to be amazing.
Appreciate the support, Ben. All the best, mate.
All right, man. All the best. Cheerios.
Bye.
So that pretty much wraps it up for the week. We'll definitely have Dennis back on, because, I mean, what a trip. Can you imagine that? Going to Pakistan, doesn't know a lot of what's going on there. And as you said, there's no real guarantees. He's just going to try and make the most of it. You got to admire guys. Just, again, it's about creating good content. That's all this is about. Forget the egos. Forget about the safety areas. Go and make good content. I just wish more of the media was about that. That is pretty much it for the show this week. The Premier League is back, so look out. Saturday, Man City versus Liverpool, 1:30 South African time. That's going to be a big one. Everton are taking on Spurs. That'll be at 4 South African time as well. And then Arsenal, the woes of Arsenal. It's only going to get worse, I believe. They'll take on Bournemouth also at 4. Chelsea will be away to Leicester at 4 o'clock. And then Stoke City will take on the might of Manchester United, who have yet to concede so far in the season. That'll be 6:30 on Saturday. And then that's pretty much all the big games you've got to worry out for. It is MTN 8 locally here in South Africa again. So we've got Maritzburg United versus Supersport United, 8:15 on Saturday. And then Sunday, Wits, who have had a bit of a rocky start to the season. Of course, they are the MTN 8 Cup holders and the League Cup holders. They'll take on Cape Town City in the return leg there. That'll be at 3 o'clock on Sunday. Kevin Hunt's already lost twice to Benny McCarthy and that team. Is it going to be a full house of three? Catch you back next week. Go on to thebounce.co.za for more content. Otherwise, follow me on Twitter at followthebounce. And same for Facebook and Instagram, TheBounce. Otherwise, find me on YouTube at Follow the Bounce. Thanks for joining me. It's been as great as ever, and I'll play out with, whatever. Catch you back next week.
This is CliffCentral.com.